All right, it is quarter past. Let's start. So this is the opening of week six, and thus everything should now be focused on the final project. However, we will continue having small sessions at the opening, so lectures, and they might not be 45 minutes, all of them, but still just as a source of inspiration and also to sort of kick off every teaching session. And today we have the honor of having our own Carl talking about good things like beer and quality. So I think without further ado, I'll let Carl introduce exactly what's going to be going on.
Yes. And I'll just try to share the screen. Oh. It worked earlier today, at least. And you can all see it. It looks fine on my.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I'm going to tell you about a project I did a while back about detecting floaters in beer. And I just saw the title on the course webpage is not entirely correct because it states CNNs, but you'll find out. And I'm Carl. I'm a PhD student under Brian. And my main focus is hardware and systems. And my machine learning angle comes in that I'm trying to take machine learning models and make them run really fast on a reconfigurable hardware, such as the FPGAs Brian have been talking about. And I'm gonna give you a short introduction to the project. And then I'm gonna tell you how we get everything ready for doing some machine learning. Then we're gonna do some machine learning, and then we're gonna try and make a discussion about what went right and what went wrong. So this is a project that I did for Carlsberg, and sometimes in beer, some particles can fold together into either, no, not particles, some proteins can fold together into particles or strings. And they become so big that you can see them with your naked eye. They aren't really an issue for taste or health, but they don't look quite appetizing. So when you take a beer and you see all this dirt flowing around, that's not very nice. Usually it occurs in damp or hot countries, so not as much in Denmark, but more so in other countries. And this is an image of one of these proteins under a microscope. And usually I bring this beer whenever I give a talk, but since we are doing a virtual presentation, I'll try my best to show you my own sample of a nice beer. So you might be able to see that there's a lot of murk and dirt in this, and these are the particles that I'm talking about. And it's just a random beer that I found somewhere, and it has been standing, I don't know, a couple of years or so, but we found it in a pile. So it does actually happen in real life. Carlsberg, they wanted a way to detect these floaters, and their current implementation is Pia. And Pia, she is an old lady who works at Carlsberg, and she will do exactly what this picture is showing. She will take a beer, hold it up against the light, and shake it a bit, and then look at it and give it six scores between 0 and 5. So one for small, medium, and large particles, so lumps, and one for small, medium, long strings. So what kind of look like hair. Another problem with this is that at first they only thought it happened in bottles, but they found out it also happens in cans. And this is because whenever you open the beer, so you depressurize it, most of these particles, they disappear, either just out into the liquid or in the foam. So you don't really see them after you've opened them. But they did actually find some, I'm not sure how, but they did. Yes. Carlsberg, they want to replace this special functionality of beer, because Pia is not hired just to be looking at beer. So she has a lot of other work which is more fitting for her. It is also, as I mentioned earlier, it doesn't really happen in Denmark. It only happens in hot or damp countries. So they would have to move either Pia or the samples to Pia, and both of which can contaminate the samples. So by moving Pia is just by the amount of time it takes for Pia to go to said location. This is why they introduced Pia 2.0, specifically the part of Pia 2.0. And it is a camera and roller setup, as we can see here on the picture. So you have a light and you have a roller. So you take the beer, put it on the roller, then you roll it around for a few seconds, and then you stop it, and then you take a video of it, so that the bottle will be static in the image and all of the insides will be flowing around inside the beer. So Carlsberg, they wanted a program which could, just like Pia do, look at the beer and give it a score. And would be very useful for Carlsberg, as it would hopefully bring a more consistent scoring, and it will also be easier to move the machine and have parallel peers rather than the single one that there is now. Yes, so now I'm going to talk about how we handle this data. So they collected 30 samples of 31 different beers. Each of these beers was sampled at 4 different days, so day 0, day 3, day 7, and day 10. For each capture, they took 8 videos of each beer. So they would rotate the beer, stop it, capture video, rotate the beer, stop it, capture video, and they did this 8 times for each beer at each day. Each video is made of 125 frames. And each frame is 4,000 by 2,000 in grayscale, which will be around 8 megabytes. So this gives us 992 videos, which in storage terms is 968 gigabytes. It is a little less because there was some filtering with the data and some wrong samples, but it's around this area. So, we do as we do in every machine learning approach. We start by looking at the data. So I will try to make a live demo here, because that is always great when it works. So this is one of the videos. And can you tell me, and this is a question for all of you, whether or not there is particles here or not, and whether they are bad. I'm just gonna give you a few seconds. I can tell you, I can see something on my monitor, and I think I can see it on, yeah, I can also see them on the one that you can see.
Hard to see where it doesn't move.
What? No. This is a video.
We're not seeing a video. So maybe that's...
Yes, you are. Okay. So you all captured the point that nothing is moving, and yes, something is moving, but it's very, very, very hard to see. Vicky just saw something moving. And I can see it as well on my screen.
So a tiny flicker, but that hardly qualifies.
Exactly. But it is just tiny flickers. So again, that was at day 0. I'll try to give you a day 10.
Aha.
So now you can see a lot more, but it's not very, very easy to see. And that was also mostly just to convince you, no, I'm not just showing you an image, it is actual video, but it's very hard to see. And yeah, again, you saw the setup before, this is in optimal conditions, so bright white light right behind the beer bottle. So this is the same that Pia sees. Yes. So like you all just saw, it's very hard to see. So we could do just throw this video at a machine learning algorithm, and it should be able to find the pattern, but it's going to take a very long time. And if we were going to do it with, let's say, CNNs, then we would need a lot of capacity to capture not the what Sophos called dirt on the glass. So we would use some common image processing. And does any of you have ideas for image processing this video? Marta is saying increased contrast, and that is one solution. I could say that is also what I'm doing, but I'm thinking more of in the order of what's some of the problems with the video you just saw. Bounce is saying difference imaging, so you're thinking of highlighting the differences between each frame. Ah. Yes.
It's not disallowed to speak up. That's okay.
Exactly. Mikkel is saying subtract the first frame. Yeah, you all got the idea for the first. So the first step would clearly be to remove the bottle, and that is to remove the background because it obscures a lot, at least for us. So, and because we have a video, we can basically just take the mean of the entire sequence and remove that. So not just the first frame, because there's also some flickering because of the light is flickering a bit and the capture is off. So they have a bit of flickering in the overall video, but taking the mean frame works pretty well. And then increase contrast. Well, that is, we are doing somewhat the difference. So we are trying to remove noise. So we blurred to remove just tiny, tiny pixels. And then we do erosion, which is morphology, where we have, let's say we have found a blob, then erosion would make that blob smaller by taking the surrounding area and letting it flow in, override it a bit. And then because we have taken all the blobs and make them smaller, we want to enhance them again because that is what we're actually looking for. So we do dilation, which is another morphology operation, and is the inverse of erosion. So we take the blobs and make them flow out so they become bigger. And then finally, we can take these blobs and find their sizes, but that is not as important right now. So now I'm gonna show you what it looks like when we do this quite simple image processing. So this was the original video where you said you couldn't see anything. And then if we remove the background and the bottle, things become a lot clearer. So this is the exact same video just with the bottle removed. And then we can do the enhancement. So we try to remove some of the noise and enhance the particles. And now it's really, really easy to see the particles. There's still some noise. So we can see some blobs that pop in and out, but they're not really a problem in the end. because they are only there for a few frames during the 125, so they are not that significant. And this was for the day zero, so let's try and do the same with the day 10. We can see here as well that it is worse than the first one. Especially this string that comes here to the right. So right around there. That is a lot more visible now.
Just to ask, I look at it, if you keep the 10 running,
yes,
then it looks as if there are more moving down than up.
Yes.
And that seems that it should be the same amount, except if there's some fogginess or, you know, depth makes it harder.
Yes. So that's some of the blobs that you can see flickering. That's some of the ones in the background. So they do move around in a barrel. So the ones moving down is the one closest to the camera. And the ones in behind are very insignificant when looking, comparing with the background. So they're very, very hard to tell apart. That's why they flicker. So sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not.
Okay.
Because they get filtered away. But the most significant ones do survive. So we see like this one going up. There was a big one right here that goes up when it repeats right there. So if that it's big,
gives a chance to measure in the data what the opacity is, or the ability to see it as a function of depth. You can actually, yes, measure that from the data then.
But yes.
Cool.
Yes, so now we're gonna try to throw it as some machine learning algorithm. The problem is that, as I mentioned before, we find all the blobs and we find the area. So we end up with a list, a variable size list of particle sizes. We have a variable list of particle sizes. And how would you get that ready for machine learning? And I can just see that Janet also asked a great question. The bottle is tilted. So when you rotate it, all of the bubbles, they go up to the top. And they would move in a different direction. So if we captured a bottle, we would see that they would go like diagonally with the video, but we haven't seen any of them yet. And it is because the camera is zoomed in on part of the beer. So we can't see the entire beer in the video. And then just to repeat my question, how will we get this list of sizes ready for training? We have the labels from Carlsberg, so it's not about the labels, it's about the training data itself. Or maybe to rephrase, what problem do we have with having a variable size of sizes? Haider says that they have different behaviors and movement, and that's not really the problem here. So for each image, we have a list of how many particles there were and how big they are. and we want to give that information to an algorithm. So we haven't captured the movements and behaviors here. And Andy says different size of inputs, and that is correct. So we need to take this variable list and we need to transform it into a representation that machine learning algorithms like, which is usually a fixed size. You can make variable sizes, but it's takes additional work. So do you have any ideas of how to take this list and make it static in size so that it has the same consistent size? Use radius. Well, that would more be what do you call it? Metric for the size of it. So the size here is just comprised of how many pixels is a blob. And PCA would be one.
I think people are wondering about size, as if size in itself is a problem.
It's not size itself that is the problem. It's only that it is a variable list, and we want to make this variable list into some format. So in this case, I chose to make a histogram. So yeah, size distribution. So, now, instead of an image of the beer, we have now transformed each image into a histogram, which has a fixed amount of bins. Of course, we need the entire data set to know how, what's the minimum and maximum range of our histogram, but we can find our entire data set make consistent histograms. And they look like this. So the x-axis is the logarithmic size of the particle, and the y-axis is the count of the particle. And here I've plotted the two videos you have just seen. So you can clearly see that the day 10 is a lot worse than day zero here. It both in terms that it is taller, so it has more particles, and that it is wider, that it have larger particles compared to day zero.
It's fun. It looks like the brown or blue underneath the orange is actually wider. That has a long tail in it, whereas the orange decays just because there is more in the orange.
Ah, yeah, okay. Yeah, so you're thinking about this slope and this slope.
Yeah. Anyhow, it's instructive to see that more happens on day 10.
Yeah, and I was thinking white as in you don't really have any blue out here at log 6. So there's a tiny, tiny orange pixel. I could actually just... oh God. Ah, okay. I have to... there we go. So there is a small pixel down here and you don't have any blue right here. So from log 5.5 and onward, there's only particles in the day 10 case. Yes. So now we have a smaller representation of each video. And just to convince you that you can tell the difference, I'll just show you a video I made. So this is not the exact same videos as I showed you before, but it's the same kind of video. So this is a day zero and this is a day 10. And you can clearly see the difference on the two in this case. Especially if you compare to the left two left videos, it's not that easy to see the significant difference. If you look at the processed video, it is a bit easier, but the histogram is, it is very easy to see.
Cool.
Yes.
Perhaps some axes, but never mind.
Yeah, this was used for a flashy showcase to lure in students. So it would just be something that would catch the eye, and then we could point at the dancing histograms. But it still pretty much shows this case very well, that we go from this to this, and you can still see the difference. All right, so now, so Janet asked what the difference was between the two rows in the video. Yes, the top one was day 0, the bottom one was day 10, so we could see a taller histogram. And Andy says, what if you suddenly get data from a larger bottle? We do have, I'll get to this problem later on, because we have somewhat the same problems, and so you just stated one of the many. Yes, but before I go on to tell you how I chose to apply machine learning, I want to ask you, what do you think will be fitting for this kind of problem? So we have now these histograms, and we have 6 labels of 0 to 5 we have to produce.
Now let people think about on that. That's a good. You have a histogram and you want to give a class, and you have some training material for it.
Yes. I can just show you this if it helps. So you have this, and you have to produce 5 numbers, no, 6 numbers between 0 and 5. I can also give you a little hint. Carlsberg would not mind if you came with a score that was greater than 6, no, 5, sorry. Again, because each of the 6 scores was small, medium, large particles and small, medium, large strings. So, and within, let's say, small particles, you would give a score of 0 to 5, indicating how many of the small particles there were. So it's not really a problem if you go above 5, as you just say, there are a lot of small particles.
Well, let me start just by kicking in a naive idea. No, okay, yeah. Partially integrate the curves in some way.
Okay. I'm not entirely sure what that is.
But let me just, if I look at the histogram, then I would say, okay, the histogram has, I don't know, 20 bins, might be empty at high values. And I'll just feed it those 20, aiming to hit a category. So it's a multi-categorization case.
Yes.
And that could be solved by any algorithm, but.
And my other hint with Carlsberg not minding above 5 is that regression would also be a fit here, because if you they came with a beer and the algorithm would say 6, then they would be very happy because it's worse than the bad ones they already know.
All right, so regression would be the...
So a multi-class regression. Oh, well, if you just forget that you have to predict 6 values, but just 1 value between 0 and 5.
Just make it a regression problem, even if it is a classification problem.
Yes. Because even though that she classifies them into strict classes, they use it as an quantification of how good or bad it is. So it is not just a step curve, but it is how she likes to classify them.
Yeah, that's actually, sorry to interrupt you, Carl, but just a case example of this was the trying to guess or estimate the age of a child based on the X-ray of their left hand. And Stanford had, I think, 12,000 x-rays collected, all different kinds of settings and sizes and so on. But they had the age. And I remember I had a student who tried that problem, and he did really well. But somehow he said, all right, there are only, 35 distinct ages in this problem. So I'll make it a multi-classification problem with 35 outcomes. And he felt that he was doing poorly because he only got a half right. But, you know, all right, if you're 17.2 or 16.8 years old, if you know, that might be hard to distinguish from an X-ray of your left hand. But if you made it a regression problem, then you got continuous ages and might say 17.0. And you would say, all right, I'm within 2 months. So that's great. Does that explain to everyone why you can make a category a continuous score and that it's actually better with a continuous score? It's just not something humans are good at. Jana?
So yeah, that's actually a really great example of the same intuition.
And he never thought about the fact that it was an age and that it was actually quite natural to give it a continuous score.
Yeah. So that's also the exact problem here. It's not that they belong to either 0 or 1. It's just that Pia feels it is more 0 and more 1. So a continuous score would be better. So for a regression problem, working on histograms, what would be a good algorithm to go with?
It's kind of a regression of a, is there a classification within a regression?
So instead of doing classification, we do regression because we want a continuous value. And we don't mind if the continuous value go beyond what we have already labeled. So let's say we trained the model and we use it on new acquired data. If the new data comes and it is a lot worse than everything we have ever seen, we would also like the model to tell us this is really, really, really bad, which is also why regression would be good here. We take the image and we transform it to an histogram and we do regression on the histogram. So sort of regression on the image. We're not classifying here, Heider. We are taking the image, so all of this is unsupervised at this point. So we find the blobs, we count them into a histogram according to size, and that's the histogram we're gonna train on.
Yes, but isn't the part where you count the blobs like a, like isn't that a thing in of itself?
Like a classification problem that, or? No, no, that's just what do you call it, image processing. So the video we had, the background is black and the particle is white. And then we just find all the contours just using standard image processing. There's no learning or anything. And then we count all of the pixels that are stuck together as a particle. And then it's the size of the pixels in that blob that becomes the size.
And just to answer you, Emil, you're confused why this is a machine learning problem at all. Well, Carlsberg and its management has surely been used to grades between 0 and 5, and would like to continue that way, not to change the scale. But they don't want to put a person there. They want to put a machine. Why do you make a machine do the same thing?
And I'll get back to that, Emil, later.
Okay.
exactly why this isn't a machine learning problem. But right now we are trying to apply machine learning to this part.
Sorry, and for the cons, for the regression, do you change the distribution that is like here in kind of Poisson, if I'm not wrong? And do you transform or something before the regression problem?
No. This is exactly the data I'm gonna throw at the algorithm.
I mean, you could sort of turn it into a classification problem if you just ask, if you just get some data where you have these beers, where somebody says, oh, this is a bad beer, this is a good enough, this is bad, this is good enough, and then you do the histograms for those beers as well, and say, oh, this type of distribution, size distribution is bad, this type is good.
Yes, you can do that, but it would limit you in this case, because then you would only train it to learn the classes that it already knows. Here we also get the benefit that we actually have classes that we don't know of yet. So we take these histograms and fit it to the classes, but as a regression, so we get a curve that says this histogram will be this good or bad. And then if we meet something that is even worse, it can go beyond what we already know. Or, well, if it's really, really good, I guess it could also go a lot down. But yeah, you could make classification here. That was not the point before that we couldn't do, but we choose to do regression because we get additional information and a bit of it.
I mean, as Emil says, a weighted mean of the histogram makes a lot of sense. So you punish really high clusters.
Yes. And I'll get to that. All right. Well, I chose to just use XGBoost, so decision trees, because we have these histograms with bins that are within some range. Some might be big, some might be small. We don't really know. And the decision trees will be really, really good at making the splits on each bin for which will then affect the outcome of the process. So that was what I was trying to get at. So if we just wanted to do, well, I had a histogram and wanted to do regression in this case, then decision trees would be fitting. And again, I'll get to the weighted mean later. So I was with XGBoost, I was able to get within half of a mean absolute error of 0.5 from the actual classification. And if we look at the diversion graph here, where we have label at the bottom and prediction on the y-axis, we do see that it is somewhat close to the line, but it's also not very close to the line in some cases. So these results aren't great, but yeah, they found some pattern and are close enough for now. And if we look at the distribution, we also do see a tight tall curve centered around zero. So it has fitted somewhat correct. As a side note, I also tried TensorFlow just because I have tried TensorFlow in the past. And when you have the setup for doing machine learning algorithms, it's easy just to exchange the algorithm itself. But TensorFlow didn't really give an improvement here. So my intuition about trees being good was somewhat correct. So Janet says the first picture makes sense. So the diversion here.
Sorry, you mentioned that in some cases it wasn't that close to the line, but considering the size distribution you showed, it makes a lot of sense to find that for small sizes we have a higher deviation, right?
Yeah, so you're thinking about this deviation or what? For the zero.
Exactly. For the smaller ones.
Yeah. But I was talking about all of them being off. So you can see that in this case it should have been a 5, but it does guess 0. Okay, it's very hard to see in this, but I can tell you that in all cases the all points have been covered, which is not as good as we would have liked. So a 0 becomes a 5 and a 5 becomes a 0 and everything in between. So it's not just for the small ones, it's also for the big particles.
As the size is larger, is like less deviation, right? Not necessarily in this case, but I guess it's what?
That's not really as present on this plot, because there's a lot more small particles, which is why it is it's a darker color. So the deviation is somewhat the same for all of the classes, even for the big particles, but there are just a lot fewer, which is why it doesn't have as dark a color as down here. I can see I still need to update this plot.
I think that it's doing reasonably well. Compared to the scoring, it's probably fair to say that this is a much better and more accurate method. And so the tails are not due to the method, it's rather due to someone putting the labels before. And when you're at zero, you can only, you know, if it is really a true zero, you can only wrongly give it a higher score, not a lower score.
Being
at 5, meaning it's reasonably that the tails are in that direction. And when I look at the subtraction, I mean, most of them will max get one score wrong, right? The RMS of that plot is not that large. I'll smile and be satisfied and go to a meeting with Carlsberg and say they should hire. Whatever you want to do.
Yes. And you just gave away some of the problems here. So what do you think? Oh, wait, I can just see if... So... I'll try to make you guess again. Now Troels said, I'll just go through them. So there are some problems. So there's the bottle bias or the pious bias. So there are different bottles here, which is also a problem. And they have different color and thickness. So they will refract light differently. And the human eyes see this differently than the machine does. So Pia actually had a bias when she classified. So that was like for green bottles, she would give them 0.9, score them only 90% of their value compared to the others. And for brown bottles, she would score them 120%, so a little higher. And this was done in another project by a student who actually calculated the bias of Pia. So that there's a problem with her classification in the sense that she will see the particles differently. It's not that much a case on the processed video as it is for human eyes. And another thing is that I haven't told you about Pia is that Pia is a beer taster. And Pia would sometimes taste beer and then do the classification or do the classification then taste beer. So, and this was done across multiple days and it was only the scores of Pia. So in this case, you cannot really trust the labels because Pia might have been tasting some really bad beers. So she's been in a bad mood, which would mean that she would give them some bad scores, but it wouldn't really be true. And this is also the error of Pia. The error of humans. So if you have done, like if you have gotten labels from humans, you shouldn't never have them from only one human because it's that there's going to be an error. I don't remember the exact case, but I remember there was one with medical imaging where they had a lot of doctors classify some cancer, tumors on some images. And they did a mean of all of their scores because of they wouldn't agree, even though they were all worthy doctors, or what do you say? And they even tried to give the doctors the same images some later days, and they would not identify the same parts as being tumors. So you can't really trust human labeling. you have to try to remove the error as much as possible. Another problem with this is also that it's a relatively small data set. So it's only 992 videos and it's only of 31 different beers. It might be a terabyte of video data, but it's not a lot of data to train on because you would all most likely want thousands of samples for it to be more fitting. So to conclude the story, I went to Carlsberg and presented the results and they agreed and they were happy with the results. So Pia herself even was completely agreeing with that only her giving scores isn't right and will never be right. And she also, she could also see the problem with bias. So when she looked at the video, the process video, she said that she said that even she could see a lot more now. So one of the things they would do if they get time, and again, Pia has many functions, not just looking at beer, but that would be to look to reclassify the beers, and that would be based on the videos. However, that will still be some error because again, if she sits down and grades 900 videos in a row, that would be you'll get tired and you'll give wrong labeling. So.
Emil just figured out that Pia was not an algorithm, but actually an actual person.
Oh.
Oh my God, really? I just figured it out when you said it now.
Pia is an old lady. And Pia also has worsened eyesight, so it gets worse as time goes on. So her classifications won't be stable in the future. Oh, I should have emphasized more that Pia is an old lady. Oh, well. Carlsberg, they primarily wanted a quantification of the state of the beer. So they didn't really need automation as much as they just need a final number, like this beer is this bad. So a small histogram turned out to be sufficient for Carlsberg. So they didn't really need the algorithm, they just needed the histogram or the sum of parts of the histogram. So the take-home message from this project was, while we didn't end up using machine learning, trying to apply the tools for machine learning actually meant that we learned a lot about the data. So they are very, very, very useful tools. Also, just seeing if a machine learning algorithm can fit helps you realize if there is a pattern in the data. Yes. So one thing we could do better was the size of the particle. So we don't really capture whether or not a particle is a string or not. So because we just count the size of it, but not the shape of it. And this works in these cases because strings are usually much larger than particles, but it might not always be the case. Yeah, so we could solve this by instead of finding contours and counting those blobs, that we will still find the contours, but try to fit a convex hull to it and look at the shape of that, and use that as an metric as well, or as a feature. And while this will put a load on processing, we still have plenty of processing time. So all of the stuff before, so like this is all done on my laptop. And even though you can see my laptop is about to catch on fire up here, it is run on my laptop. It is not one of my bigger machines running it. So it's not because this takes a lot of processing time, it is relatively fast. So again, they are sampling across days, so it won't take days to process this. And then, as some said, using some more unsupervised, so like PCA and such, would also to use that for classification rather than having peer or multiple peers sit through the entire videos would also be beneficial here, I would think. Mm-hmm. And that concludes my talk.
Cool, thank you. I urge everyone to unmute for a moment and salute Carl. Please join me. All right, I have one question out general. Do you remember what Brian said about unsupervised classification, that when you have large data sets for something you just haven't looked at, they're really good? And Alexander Nielsen also said he always runs an unsupervised algorithm on data just to see what it looks like. Well, if you're producing something, put up a camera and a microphone or several cameras and, I don't know, x-ray, whatever you feel like, record whatever comes out of your factory and feed it to an unsupervised network, boil it down to a few parameters and feed it to an unsupervised, that might be the way to go.
Yeah.
At least for a first hint.
Yeah. So again, it's really important to look at your data to see. So in this case, the majority was just, how can I make myself see the pattern better? And that helped the machine learning algorithm a lot. But it turned out that once I found the pattern, there wasn't need for a machine learning algorithm.
Yeah, I would, any comments or questions from people, just feel free to unmute. And
I can also tell you that one of the meetings I had with Pia was right after a beer tasting, and Pia was a bit rundt på gulvet.
Tipsy,
yes, because she had just tasted 25 different beers in a short amount of time. And we also asked her if it's a good thing to be a beer taster. She said no, because you most of the time you only have to taste the bad beers, sadly.
Why? Misproductions or...
Yeah. So if there's a wrong smell or wrong taste, she is like the final labeling of, yes, this is bad. No, they do have multiple people tasting. Oh yeah, there was a question from Janet. Janet, yeah.
Sure you would, Andy.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. Now we talked about production, you know, like a factory or so on. But actually, any place where information comes in, these are some things to apply. Just to make you aware that, for example, the great inboxes of large companies, for example, insurance companies, right? They have one place where you submit your complaint or whatever you want to talk about. And I mean, they get a deluge of data, and just sorting a little bit in that is quite useful. For example, they say, all right, you can submit in Danish or English. Can it detect language? You know, does it include a reference to anything we know here? You know, there are lots of things that you can look up ahead of time. Is the sentiment angry or sad or happy or yeah? And I saw that one of the groups had chosen sentiments from tweets as a subject. Looking forward to hearing that.
I can also just show. I had a bachelor's project with a guy who was trying to look at yearly reports from companies, and then he would predict whether or not they would go bankrupt the following year. So, Denmark's Nationalbank, they made a report called "Can Machine Learning Models Capture Correlation in Corporate Distresses?" And they used some classical statistical methods, and some new, long one of those was XGBoost, gradient boosted trees. So this student's job was to try to reproduce their results. And he actually did okay. So their score was 0.822 of area under curve, and he was able to get 0.867 just by looking at the public reports from companies, he could, in many cases, predict whether or not they would be in distress the following year. And even where his results was really, really good was that if we look at whenever his model was confident, it was most of the time right. So if this proved to be a useful tool for the company, he would do it for, because it would then say no or yes or maybe. So maybe it would require human intervention, but if it just said plain no or plain yes, then everything was fine. They didn't have to look at it. So again, looking at whatever you can, you might find a pattern.
It's quite wild here. I noticed the numbers on the y-axis. This is number of companies. I mean, we're in the hundreds of thousands of companies.
Yes. And further work he could have done, he did this for all companies. And generally, the companies which had billion and billions of Danish kroner in capital, they weren't going to go into distress the following year, funny enough. But there would also be a lot of correlation between, because there's also sister companies and undock companies, or what they're called, sub companies. So if they would all be gathered under the same umbrella, it would be a lot more precise. And also if you classify the company after what it's doing. So a big bank will not as likely go into distress as a small one-man company, or well, the other way around, I don't know. But further work could be done. This was just by looking at the data itself.
Cool. We've spent an hour now, which means I think that we should definitely have a good long break. And I suggest that we hold here and reconvene 14:40. So that's 23 minutes of break. And then at 14:40, we will simply discuss final projects. We can subdivide and so on. And that's the plan. And I have also on the final project webpage put not only what your subjects and groups are, but also a contact person, which is something, I'll also write it out, is in order for you to have, not to have to explain the same thing over and over again because you contact someone new, at least have somebody that you regularly spar with and say, all right, does this look good, or can I do this and that? Please use us. And please, interact or complain or come crying with code that doesn't work, or don't hold back. Any questions or comments at the end? Nope. All right. Well, we'll break for here. See you in 22 minutes.